We're continuing our ongoing reading of Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We have come to the seventh chapter of the first part. Just to give a little background, because it's been quite some time since we have been reading. Krishna was, for some reason, he was in anxiety. And Uddhava, who always is with Krishna, Uddhava is always with Krishna. That's why Uddhava is the most confidential friend of Krishna in Dwarka. He was with Krishna, but when he saw that Krishna was, you know, staying in, I mean, Krishna never sleeps in. We know from the Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna gets up, you know, before the cock crows every day and performs all the duties performed by Grahastha devotees perfectly. He tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that whatever, you know, activities great men follow, the common men follow. And then he says, Nami Parthasti Kartavyam, Trishu Lokeshu Kinchana, Nanabhav Mama Bhakmana Bhartha, Bhartha Eva Jukarmani. He says, and if I didn't do my duty, then everyone would follow me and they would go away from duty. Yadi Yaham Nabhartayam, Jatu Karman Yatanjana, Mama Bhakmana Bhartha, Timanusha Bhartha Savasa. And this way everyone would be misled. Utsideyurime loka na karyam karmachedaha sankarasya tsakartasa upahanyamamavacha. So I always follow, you know, my duty so that everyone can know what to do and what not to do, so that the world can be maintained properly according to religious principles. So imagine, you know, Krishna one day, you know, he sleeps in. And Uddhava, it's so unusual that Uddhava becomes an anxiety. He comes out of Krishna's bedroom and he's there on the veranda. And other devotees who notice that Krishna was sleeping in are gathered there in the veranda. And they're discussing. So Devaki was there, Balaram's there, Rukmini's there, Satyabhama's there, the main queens of Krishna are there. And they're all discussing, you know, the situation. How is it that Krishna is feeling the way he is? And although Uddhava tried to delay the discussion, he tried to avoid or put off the discussion about the real reason Krishna was feeling so much anxiety, and that was that he was feeling intense separation from the residents of Vrindavan, from his childhood friends and sweethearts and his parents and just Vrindavan in general. So in the course of the conversation, different devotees expressed different viewpoints as to, you know, what the cause of this anxiety Krishna was in, what was the cause, and what were the solutions. Balaram had one point of view, and his mother had the same point of view. Rukmini had another point of view. Rohini had another. And anyway, there was a discussion that went on, just giving a summary. And at one point, those who were kind of taking the sides of the Vrajvasis, in a sense, because, you know, Krishna promised to go back to see them, and he hadn't gone back to see them as yet. And those who were, especially those who had been there, Rohini had been there, and so she tended to favor the Vrajvasis, and in a way to encourage Krishna to go back and see the Vrajvasis. And Balaram was feeling the same way, because they had both been there, they had lived there. They knew the intensity of the devotion of the Vrajvasis for Krishna. They knew, therefore, you know, how they were feeling, and they knew, therefore, why Krishna was feeling these intense feelings of anxiety, separation. And at one point during the conversation, Balaram made some very strong statements, you know, that you know, we don't know, you know, what will happen. Krishna came out from his room, you know, and he was, you know, upset. And he looked at Balaram, and Balaram said, very heavy, something very heavy. He said, if you don't go there, they're not going to be satisfied with gifts anymore. They're not going to be satisfied with messages anymore. You've sent messages, you've sent gifts, you've sent so many things, but they're not satisfied with this. They want you. You know, they want to see you, they want to touch you, they want to feed you, they want to... all the things that we do when we live with each other. They want to do those things with you. They're not satisfied with, you know, philosophical understandings of why they should feel detached and why that you're there, you know, all-pervading anyway, so why are you in anxiety? Just meditate on me like that. They're not satisfied with those things. They want to be with Krishna. They want to serve Krishna face to face. Please Krishna. They want to see Krishna, please. This is in essence, this is what devotional service is. In essence, devotional service is to please Krishna and to please Krishna's devotees. So anyway, when he looked to Balaram in this situation, and Balaram made this heavy statement that, well, we don't know whether, you know, these Vaishnavas are going to be able to live without you, so we better not talk any further about it. And then, of course, the implication was that they're going to die unless you go there. And then Krishna went into complete transcendental ecstasy and anxiety, feeling separation from the Vrajavasis, thinking about what might happen to them, and he fainted. And the Dwarkabasis who were there, they also began to cry out in separation from Krishna in such an intense way that all the residents of Dwarka began to cry out. And the sound, the combined sound of all the Vaishnavas crying out to Krishna in such a helpless condition, went through the universe. And that's where we're picking up the reading from. So we're going to begin reading text 1, chapter 7, part 1 of Sri Priya Bhagavatamrita with Srila Sanatana Goswami's commentary, Digdarshini. Sri Prekshita Vacha Itamsa Paribharyasya Matas Tasyar Tirodhanai Brahmandam vyapa sanjato mahupata chayachanat. Sri Parikshit said, a dear mother, as the sound of Krishna lamenting with his family members filled the universe, a series of terrible omens quickly ensued. Commentary, Digdarshini. In this seventh chapter, Brahma relieves Sri Krishna of his bewilderment. And Krishna delights Narada by describing the supreme position of the gopis. As the Yadus were running towards Krishna's palace, bad omens appeared in the sky, such as meteors and lightning without rain. We hear in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. We hear in Srimad Bhagavatam various places where, when inauspicious things were about to happen, especially when Krishna was about to leave a place, or what to speak of when Krishna was about to leave, close his pastimes on the earth and go to somewhere else, the devotees, they could understand that something was up because of different omens. Here, two of them are mentioned, you know, meteors falling from the sky, lightning without rain. I mean, even nowadays, you know, if a meteor comes into the atmosphere and hits the planet, it's considered to be something not so auspicious, dangerous. It's just not an auspicious sign. But here, we understand the sense of omen in a deeper deeper sense, the spiritual sense. When Kamsa, for instance, was born, there were all kinds of portents that appeared. You know, the clouds were raining substances that they don't normally rain. You could hear different animals crying out in certain ways that were very fearful and very ominous. And the devotees and people who were in the know, so to speak, they felt inauspiciousness in the atmosphere. And of course, we know that Krishna is the soul of the universe. He's the super soul. He's the soul of the universe. Just like each body, each one of our bodies has a predominant soul. You know, and whatever's happening in our body, you know, the soul is conscious, is aware of it. If we have a pain in our body somewhere, that, you know, another person may not be able to detect it, but we can detect it. Whatever is going on in the body, we're conscious of that. So Krishna, being the Supreme Soul, his consciousness pervades the whole universe. And he's aware of everything that's going on in the universe. So his feelings and his emotions and the effect that they have, you know, on the universe are universal. They're the same principle, but he understands what's going on. Like we will feel anxiety because of one little thing that's going on with our body, but he will feel anxiety if something's going on in one part of the universe, or one part of his, what is called in the Bhagavatam, the external, his external form, the material cosmic manifestation. So Lord Brahma is at the top of the universe. And this sound is so intense that it comes to him, and he sees all these different omens, these inauspicious omens. Text number 2. Tantranya buddhika bhava swayam agach chatur mukha pito veda purana jai paribai surayarapi. Because four-headed Brahma could find no one else to explain the cause of these omens. He came to see for himself, accompanied by the Vedas, the Puranas, his personal attendants, and various demigods. Commentary. Brahma is indeed a learned person. In fact, his chosen advisors are the Vedas and the Puranas, who stay in his court, always ready to offer their counsel. I was just reading a purport the other day in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which described how an astrologer came to see Lord Chaitanya. Not an ordinary astrologer, very deeply realized and mystic astrologer who could go into trance and see things, not just his you know, calculations and his conclusions based on astrological calculations were not just based on the mathematical or the material calculations. They were based also on his vision, his ability to go deep into meditation and see different things. So Lord Chaitanya asked him, Who was I in my last life? And both by his calculations and by his meditative trance, he could see that he had no last life. He was actually the Supreme Absolute Truth, which may not have been discernible just by the calculations, but because he was a great devotee, and obviously because he was coming in contact with Lord Chaitanya directly, he was becoming eligible to be liberated from material existence. So that's what happened. Lord Chaitanya liberated him from material existence. In the purport to those verses which describe this incident, Prabhupada describes that the Brahmins in the Vedic culture were very learned. Here it's described as, you know, Brahma being the original personality, the Vedic culture, and the basically the spiritual master, the disseminator of knowledge, all kinds of knowledge in this material universe since the beginning of the creation of the universe, is a very learned person. And those who follow in the footsteps of Lord Brahma, those who follow in the footsteps of the knowledge that he has disseminated through the universe, that Krishna disseminated through the universe through him, they become, generally, the Brahmanas become teachers, they become astrologers, they become advisors, you know, to kings and to the people who are ruling. They become expert in medical, in the medical science. All the sciences of the Vedas, which have to do with, you know, taking care of our bodies and minds in a way that allows us to live in harmony with nature and in an atmosphere that's conducive to devotional life and devotional service. The Brahmanas were like that, and therefore they were given respect, and they didn't charge for their services. Originally in the Vedic culture, the Brahmanas were they wandered, or if they had families and stayed in one place, they would live very, very simply, or sometimes they would live in the forest and just travel around and take, you know, a little alms from different people to maintain themselves and their families. But because they were always giving knowledge freely, people would ask them all kinds of things about their the things that they needed to know about how to live in the material world peacefully and in a spiritual life. And the Brahmanas would go everywhere, and they would give this knowledge to everyone freely. So it wasn't nowadays in material Western civilization, which is spreading all over, the materialistic civilization is increasing and spreading all over. In order to get knowledge about things, you have to be very like very qualified. You have to have attended university. You have to have had a certain degree. You have to have certain qualifications to know the kinds of things that people, you know, want to know and think that are the things that they need to be happy and peaceful and live in this world. Especially technology, and therefore the knowledge of these things, they're not available just to anyone. The common man, the poor people, they don't have this knowledge. But in the Vedic culture, you know, real knowledge was disseminated by Brahmins who studied the Vedas, knew the Vedas, and knew how the material nature was working, how the laws of nature were working, and they could give advice to people. They could give training to people. They could give comfort and real solace to people in all kinds of circumstances, whether they be sick, whether they have some kind of, you know, disturbance within their social, you know, life, or whether their agricultural development, whatever problems they were having. The Brahmanas, they had the answers, very deep answers, coming from the Vedas, and they would give it freely. They wouldn't charge, you know, according to the level of knowledge they were giving, they would charge more, some kind of sliding scale of, you know, money that you had to have in order to get, you know, deeper and deeper knowledge from the Brahmins. No, they were openly giving knowledge to everyone. So here, Lord Brahma is described to be, in the purport, in the commentary, to be a learned person. And he's so learned that the persons who are in his court advising him are the personified Vedas and Puranas. We'll hear in the next part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita how Gopa Kumar attained the post temporarily of Lord Brahma by the pure-hearted chanting of the mantra that his spiritual master gave him. And at that time, he was also witness to the court of Lord Brahma, and he was privy to conversations, discussions that were going on by the Vedas and the Puranas and the Upanishads and all the Vedangas, and they were discussing things. Can you imagine the conclusions that they came to? The Siddhantas were just very, very high. So that's the situation. Brahma's there and he's hearing this tumultuous sound and this influence that's coming from the crying out of the Dwarkavasis, the most influential people in the universe, Krishna's family members, personal family members. They're crying out because Krishna has fainted and he's in anxiety. He's lamenting. Of course, these stages of lamentation are not like our lamentation. These lamentations are not caused by any material cause. They're not material. They have a different effect on the consciousness. Our lamentation is caused by hankering for what we don't have yet and lamenting for what we've lost. Because we are entangled, absorbed, overwhelmed, covered by the material nature, the actions, interactions of material nature. Therefore, even though we're eternal souls, and we have the hankerings of the eternal soul to live forever and to enjoy forever and to know everything, to not be in ignorance, still, we're in this atmosphere where all the things that we try to use and all the people that we try to interact with in order to love and deal with in different ways are always changing. And so we're always constantly in this state of lamentation. But this lamentation that Krishna and the Dwarkavasis are experiencing, and it's risen up to the level of Lord Brahma, it's not like that. It is not material anxiety. These are spiritual feelings that are coming from deep expressions of love that the devotees of Krishna have for one another. This is the theme of especially the first part of Brihat Bhagavatamrita. This is the theme. How one devotee after another that Narada surveys as he's traveling through the different parts of the universe and in order to find the devotees who have received the most mercy from Krishna, the greatest devotees of Krishna. He's looking for them. And in doing that, in taking this survey, he meets so many devotees from so many places and so many categories of life and existence. And in each time, he tries to praise them based on what he has heard from the previous devotee he has surveyed. And each time, they reject the praise. And they give very good arguments, as he goes through the categories of devotees, as he goes up to more and more advanced and, let's say, more intimate devotees, closer and closer to Krishna, personally, he finds their arguments to be more and more subtle, and therefore his arguments have to be more and more subtle. And the arguments he's repeating from the previous devotees are more and more subtle. So in this way, we can understand that there's no limit to how humble we can become in devotional service. It's not that as we advance in devotional service and rise up, you know, in the ranks of devotees, you know, in any way, spiritually or materially, that we become, you know, proud or that we become feeling we are, you know, something special. No. The devotees, as they go advance, as they advance more and more, they become more and more humble. Which means that they're more and more capable of seeing the good qualities in others, in other devotees particularly. In everyone, but particularly the devotees, because the devotees have so many good qualities. So anyway, Lord Brahma is there, he's got his his court, he's sitting in his court and he's asking them, what is this phenomenon? But because this phenomenon isn't within the modes of nature, Krishna says to Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishyaveda, Nishtrigunya Babarjana, Nirguna Mo Nidhisakrista, Niryoga Chimabhava, He advises Arjuna. Now, rise up above the modes of nature. The modes of nature mainly have to do with the Vedas. I mean, the Vedas have mainly to do with the descriptions of the modes of material nature. But you should rise above them. Pure devotional service means to rise above the modes of nature. We may try to live and organize ourselves in a way that we can be in goodness, so that our senses and mind are peaceful, so that the real desire of the soul can come through, and we can more easily understand and accept and perform devotional service, devotional activities. Devotional service culminates in total absorption in Krishna consciousness. It culminates in total, when the mind and senses are totally engaged in transcendental loving service to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees. When there's no more concern, trigunya vishyabena, nishtrigunya vibhajana, nirdvan vo nityasatvasto, niryoga chema atmavan. Krishna says to Arjuna, rise above this platform where you're always thinking of yourself and how to keep yourself together and all these concerns, all these personal concerns. Rise above that. And what that means to rise above that is to try to please the senses of Krishna and Krishna's devotees with all the resources that we have. This is real selfless service. This is real freedom from false ego. This is the real platform of happiness described by Krishna. Vihaya kamanyak sarva pumang charini nirmamonya rahankara sashanti madhikashtiti. Only by becoming free from the platform of ahankar. The platform of ahankar is the platform of identifying with the body to be the self, and the material mind to be the self. Vihaya kamanyak sarva. You give up material desires and accept desires, the desire to please Krishna and to please Krishna's devotees. Nirmamo nirahankara. This is the platform of false ego. And nothing is mine. Nothing is mine means everything is Krishna's. Everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna is meant to be used by Krishna's devotees in order to please him, satisfy him. Sashantim adigachtiti. All this always talk about shanti, 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 and everybody's looking for this peace, for this happiness, for this freedom from material complexities and anxieties and all the labyrinth of things that we are, you know, steeped in this material world. Sashantim adigachtiti. But that cannot be had as long as we are being conducted by the modes of material nature. We have to be conducted by the transcendental potency of the will, the personal will of Krishna. So, you know, Brahma's got all these, the personified Vedas around him, knows so many things, you know, but they can't explain to him what that sound is or what that influence is that he's perceiving. Text 3 and 4. Tam apurva dashapajam prishta pranaya kataram niguda nijamahatmyam varaprakatanodatam mahatnarayanam brahma pitaram guram atmanah sachamatkaram alokyam dvastadaryo rudhachamam. Brahma found his own father and spiritual master, the original Narayan, in an unprecedented state, distressed by love for his beloved devotees. Seeing the Lord thus boldly revealing his true greatness, normally hidden, Brahma was astonished. For a moment, he too lost his gravity and began to cry. Commentary. So remember, in the verse, previous verse, It says, because four-headed Brahma could find no one else to explain the cause of these omens, he came to see for himself, accompanied by the Vedas, the Puranas, his personal attendants, and various demigods. And Sanatana Goswami tells us, more or less, that because his court could not tell him, he had to go for himself. If you're surrounded by people, you need to do something, and you're surrounded by people who are advising you, and they don't know what to do, then you have to do it yourself. Otherwise, it won't get done. Real leadership. Prabhupada came to the West, he did everything himself in the beginning. First initiations, he cooked prasadam, he decorated, he made everything right, his disciples came in, took the initiation, and went out, went home. And Prabhupada cleaned up. He did everything. Because they didn't know what to do. It was only after Prabhupada overwhelmed them with his love, his spiritual perceptions, his devotional service, that they began to ask him, is there anything we can do, Swamiji? And then, of course, as soon as they asked, then Prabhupada said, yes, you can do this, you can do that, you can do this. But he never, you know, forced them or pushed them, because he was actually such a great spiritual master that he would bring out the loving feelings, the loving devotional service from the heart by his association. Even persons who had no idea what to do, lost completely, bewildered completely. He, by his association, by his, the way he dealt with us, and the way he served us, actually, it was uncanny. It brought out the service attitude from us. And we felt like doing something for him. And he waited until we inquired about that. And then he engaged us. And as we began to engage practically in devotional service, then the knowledge that he was giving to us became alive. Devotional knowledge and devotional service is not book knowledge. It's not theoretical knowledge. Jai, she's going to. Knowledge is real. It's realized. And engages and enlivens and engages us completely. Our mind. Bhakti yoga means when everything becomes engaged in the Lord's service. Everything that we own, everything that we have, everything that the persons that we know own and have, our minds, our own minds, our own body, everything is used for the purpose of pleasing the senses of Krishna. It's only on this platform that we can become free from false ego and stop thinking that we are brahmanas or we are, you know, yogis or we are, you know, great devotees even, or that we are Americans or that we are Indians or that we are Christians or Hindus, or black or white or whatever material designation. It's only when we actually rise above that platform and by the mercy and by the inspiration of the spiritual master who is serving Krishna with all of his resources, can we understand the knowledge. It's not that you can understand Krishna consciousness just by, you know, memorizing the slokas and becoming a learned scholar. That's something. It's not that that's nothing. It's not that it's unimportant. It is important. But to actually feel satisfied, to actually be motivated to serve and feel transcendental pleasure when we're serving the devotees and when we're serving Krishna, when we come off the platform of trying to find something for ourselves, that separates us from others. This desire, the personal desire for my own advancement even, or my own pleasure, my own to avoid trouble, to all these different things. These are all coming from the platform of false ego. They're all coming from the bodily concept. And the only process that's thorough enough and deep enough and resonant enough with the soul and the senses and everything is pure devotional service to Krishna. Therefore, we can actually measure, Prabhupada said we should actually assess our situation, our position in devotional service, our position in spiritual life, by how much free we are becoming from, you know, personal desires for sense gratification, or how much our consciousness is affected by, you know, opposing, you know, ideas to our ideas, or whatever. You know, all the things that seem to separate us, you know, from others, how much they agitate us and put us off from the platform of devotional service. The difficulties that we are experiencing, the difficulties even in sometimes performing devotional service, just like we just came back from Mayapur, I'm saying this for those, the benefit of the devotees who weren't there. We saw the installation of Panchatattva. These deities are so big. I mean, when I tried to understand how they got the deities from, you know, how they brought them here and put them on the altar, you couldn't understand. They were so big. I mean, each deity weighs more than 3 tons. 3 tons. And then I was asking the devotees, you know, what happened? How did this happen that all these devotees got, these deities got on the altar? I was talking to Jananivas, who is like the head pujari there, and you know, he's the eternal pujari. So anyway, he's got such a service attitude towards the deities we can't even imagine. And he was saying, yes, he said, I was thinking the day that the deities arrived and they had a ceremony, you know, at the yoga pit to greet them before they came to, you know, Aristotle property in Mayapur. He was thinking, yes, let me go and greet, you know, the forms of the Lord who have arrived. And he wasn't thinking that the Lord was arriving, because he was thinking, these are the forms that when we, you know, install, and, you know, then the Lord will appear, and, you know, that he was thinking like that. But, you know, as he went there, you know, closer to that situation, he saw that, like, all the villagers from all around the area, they all just came out to greet the Lord. And as he came close to the deities, he felt, you know, his consciousness being transformed. And he saw how everybody, no matter what camp they were in, no matter what they thought about anything, they were all, like, awakened, you know, by the appearance of these deities. And then, you know, the procession that went from there to our property and to the altar in Mayapur was just, it was out of this world. There was no question that the Lord hadn't arrived and they weren't giving him mercy and that devotional service wasn't being performed right there, you know, before the installation. And then he was telling me how it took how many days? It took a number of days to get the deities inside the temple room and onto the altar. From the time they went from through the door of the temple room to get on the altar, it took days to move the deities. You know, it was all done by, you know, pulleys and ramps, you know. Sometimes when we see miracles like the pyramids in Egypt and we wonder how they were built, you know. Maybe they had mystic powers and they were, you know, rocks were flying around, you know, by their mental power or whatever. And of course, historians say that it was labor intensive. It looks like they would have just, you know, hundreds and thousands of people pulling stones up these, you know, wooden ramps. And anyway, different ways to do things. But, you know, we not being, you know, mystic yogis, we didn't have those other ways. So we did it that way, labor intensive. You know, hundreds of devotees pulling inch by inch by inch, you know, to get, and it could not have been done if all the devotees didn't cooperate together and work till the sweat was coming out of their brows. It could not have been done. The thing I was realizing was that, you know, the deities are worshipped and you know, this movement is going on by the combination of the loving service that we're there. The other idea is that I have my relationship with Krishna, and the advanced state of Krishna consciousness is when I'm by myself, undisturbed by all of these different, you know, difficult activities, service, that we have too much service to do. And the more advanced stage is to go by myself and just awaken my relationship with Krishna. Near Bhajan. But I was realizing during this festival that when Srila Prabhupada said to us in the very end, towards the end, that the test of your love for me will be how well you cooperate together to keep this movement together so that other people can come to devotional service. You know how Prahlad Maharaj used to pray that, you know, let others go to the Himalayas, let others go into the caves, and let others take this process of devotional service where we go by ourselves and are not disturbed by the social pressures and tensions and influences that are automatically there whenever there's a group of people working together, whether it be material or spiritual. You know, it's difficult. Here is the situation. You have all these devotees, you know, responding to Krishna's anxiety, and they're coming together, and it's creating a difficult situation for them. But they are not backing off from that difficult situation. Brahma did not back off from that difficult situation. He went there. He went there to find out himself, what's wrong here? And now we'll see. Now Brahma is for a moment, he's lost his gravity even. Brahma is the most grave person in the universe. He has to be grave because he has to keep the whole, by his meditation and his management and his organization, you know, the whole universe is being maintained. When he stops, when he goes to sleep at night, you know, a good percentage of the universe is destroyed because it's no longer being kept together by his thoughtfulness. That's what a great personality he is. But even he, you know, came there and there they were. Anyway, we'll read the purport, the commentary. Brahma is not just the main engineer of universal creation, but also an intimate loving servant of the Supreme Lord. And that Supreme Lord himself is not just the ultimate origin of creation, but also the greatest loving servant of his devotees. The Lord is the greatest loving servant of his devotees. So if you're a devotee and you are not into giving loving service to Krishna's devotees, how can you think that you are approaching love for Krishna? How can you think that you are approaching love for Krishna? And we know this inside of us. Each one of us knows it. Because as soon as we pull back from service, in our hearts we become less satisfied. And as soon as we take on more, as soon as we extend ourselves, to the extent that we extend ourselves in loving service to satisfy the devotees of Krishna, we know, because inside ourselves we become free from so many things, from so many anxieties, from so many pressures. And then in that liberated condition, we can do anything for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada's life was the perfect example of this. And we're all sitting here in ISKCON Bhaktivedanta Ashram or whatever ISKCON Center in the world, you know, tasting this unbelievable spiritual atmosphere that we experienced when Panchatattva actually finally did get, you know, installed. And it took how many devotees? They had to make, like, you know, buckets this big of chandan. You know, we're like, oh, you know, we have to make this much chandan. Oh, they had to make buckets of chandan. These deities are so big that when Jayapataka stood up and other devotees stood up, they had a scaffolding. They had to have a scaffolding around the deities. And the devotees were on the scaffolding in different parts, you know, doing different things in the bodies of the Lord. It was like, you know, Gulliver's Travels. You know, there's this book of Gulliver's Travels where Gulliver you know, ends up in a place where all the people are little tiny people, and they're all like, you know, trying to tie him up, you know, and they took, you know, millions of them just to put him down and keep him from. Anyway, that's a pretty gross example, but I thought it was like, well, you could see how little everyone was in relationship to the Lord. And what it really takes to serve the Lord is that all of us must work together. Individually, within each one of us, we must fight against this tendency to avoid devotional service, to avoid the trouble that it takes to collectively, together, serve Krishna, because he's not going to be pleased by anything else. Sometimes people who live in Braj and think that they're following the Goswamis, they want to go off and live under the tree by themselves, and they stop talking to other people and they just go into the near bhajan. But they don't realize that the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they would meet regularly. Did you know this? They would meet regularly at different places, especially at the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. You know, where Jivas Goswami had collected like 20,000 manuscripts. At one point, there was a big flood and they lost most of them. I think there's only 5,000 or 6,000 left, but at one point they had 20,000 manuscripts. And they would meet together there, and they would pour over these manuscripts, and they would discuss together Krishna consciousness. It wasn't that the Goswamis were just off by themselves, and they were reading and writing the books, and you know, the others didn't know what they were doing, it didn't have anything to do with what they know. Rupa Goswami would write his manuscript, and then what would he do? He would give it to Jiva to edit. He would give the manuscript to Jiva to edit. They were so close. They had such loving relationships. Sanatana Goswami was so intimately loved by the residents of Braj that he would give, you know, all the residents of Braj, whoever came to him, advice on all levels. He would talk to them about, you know, how their cows were doing, you know, what kind of milk was coming. You know, who their daughters and sons were going to marry. Was everything peace? Any differences of opinion happened between husband and wife? You know, husband and wife, there's always going to be fights between husband and wife. And they would come to Sanatana Goswami, and they were so in love with him, and he was so loving servant of them, that they would just put their problem before him. And whatever he would say, the wife would say, yes, okay. Women, you can't get them to agree with anything if their heart's set on it. But when Sanatana Goswami was there, he would say, yes, this is the solution. And whatever he said, both the husband and wife would agree. Yes, they would go happy. Their problem was solved. Because they were associating together with the devotees. And Sanatana Goswami was serving the Brajvasis. He was serving the devotees in loving devotional service. So the tendency is very strong. The tendency is very strong to avoid the problem and to go within oneself and just be with me and Krishna. But this isn't going to make it. It's very difficult to do, first of all. And even if you do, you end up having to go to Braj and associate with all the Brajvasis in loving service to Krishna. That's the goal. So Dipachatakva, they have, you know, appeared again in a very wonderful form in Mayapur to give out this mercy of loving devotional service. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that they broke the mold, they broke the storehouse, they broke the seal on the storehouse of love of Krishna Prema, and they gave this Krishna Prema freely. They gave it freely. They didn't consider who was qualified and who was not qualified. But the opposite mentality, the caste Brahmin mentality, the material mentality, that one has to have this qualification or that qualification or this qualification or that qualification, and to look down on others who have less qualifications, and to see the process of devotional service in that light, in those eyes, is what Lord Chaitanya and the Panchatattva came to obliterate. He came to obliterate that. He came to give love for Krishna you know, through the chanting of Hare Krishna, freely, without discrimination. And what's the symptom of it? We saw the symptom of it in Mayapur just recently, just the last few days, when all the devotees came together and greeted the Panchatattva, and you could see the loving service of all the devotees, whether they were just in the temple room, just, you know, beaming with reciprocation and love for what they were seeing, and chanting, you know, and is that what their service, or whether they were pujaris, scurrying around, and, you know, they had so much charnamrita. It was like the charnamrita was flowing out of pipes from the walls. You could take a bucket of charnamrita just in a few seconds. I don't know how many gallons of water they used, Ganga Jala used to bathe the deities. It was inconceivable. It was just inconceivable. And if you went, and then they had the kids, the children, they were in the front of the altar. The water was just going everywhere. It wasn't that, you know, like we have this little deity and we catch it in this little pot, you know, and then we sip it and do it. It was just, the charnamrita was just flowing up onto the altar. And the kids were like, they were like having a good time. They were running, you know, with these squeegees and shoo, you know, they were like running, and everybody was laughing, watching the children run, you know, in front of the altar to get the altar up. Otherwise the whole temple would have been flooded with charnamrita. It was like an ocean. It was like we were being inundated by charnamrita. And the Panchatattva were just standing there, just beaming, just, you know, it was inconceivable, actually. We were all looking at each other. Tears were coming to our eyes. Our hearts were completely satisfied because we were together greeting the Panchatattva and rendering devotional service to them. This is what devotional service is. Devotional service isn't done alone, just between you and Krishna. That isn't devotional service. And even if Nirbhajan is a way for some people, because of their natures, to get to a platform of devotional service, when they enter, then they're going to have to serve with the other Vaishnavas. So the Panchatattva have, Srila Prabhupada, as the representative of the Panchatattva, came around the world and he gave us this rare opportunity to serve together the deities in their all the different forms, in loving devotional service in Krishna's family. So here we see the situation. Here, Krishna's family, the Yadus, they're calling out, they're in anxiety. It's gone all the way up to the top of the universe. Lord Brahma, you know, is bewildered by it. You know, he's asking his advisors, the Vedas, the Puranas, you know, what's going on here? They said, we don't know. The all-knowing Vedas, we don't know. We can't understand this. This is beyond us. Well, Brahma says, oh, I better go see for myself. How can I understand what's going on here? So he comes and he sees, you know, Lord Narayan, his Lord Narayan, because we all see Krishna according to our relationship, and he has that relationship, you know, his worshipable Lord, in an unprecedented state, distressed and crying and lying in the ground, unconscious, and all of his family members, you know, screaming and crying at the top of their lungs, like when Prabhupada left this world, we were in his room, and we were gone, we were in another place. We were screaming and crying out, and the world became vacant, and we couldn't do anything. Because what? Because our life and soul was leaving. The link to our devotional service. What were we going to do? Unless we keep the link and the relationship up with our spiritual master, how much do we think, if our spiritual master has departed, how much do we think of him? How much are we gauging what we're doing to be right or wrong according to what he would think, rather than what I would think? What's happy, what's pleasing me? You can't get devotional service by trying to please yourself, by doing what's going to make you happy, by doing what you think is going to make you happy in relationship to Krishna. You can't get to Krishna like that. You can only get to Krishna through the spiritual master, by pleasing and serving the spiritual master. And what does that mean? Pleasing the spiritual master means to do it the way he likes you to do it, the way he wants you to do it, in the mood that he wants you to do. Because Krishna is never alone with his devotee. Never. So look, here, Sanatana Goswami says, Brahma is not just the main engineer of universal creation, but also an intimate, loving servant of the Supreme Lord. And that Supreme Lord himself is not just the ultimate origin of creation, but also the greatest loving servant of his devotees. Krishna's highest glories are not to be found in his pastime of creating the material world so that the rebellious souls may indulge in their perverted intentions. Earlier in Krishna's pastimes, Brahma had visited Rajbhumi and discovered Krishna's true glories in the ecstatic relationships between Krishna and his pure devotees. Now, in Dwarka, Brahma is being granted further realization. He is learning that Krishna's most wonderful qualities are his concern for his devotees and his submission to their control. Realizing this, Brahma can now more fully understand Krishna's identity as the original Supreme Lord Narayan. Brahma was not ignorant of these matters before, but seeing in such a helpless state his own progenitor, who had taught him the Vedas, shocked Brahma into a deeper realization. When Brahma saw Krishna in distress, he himself could not help but cry. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Madhavendra Puri was in the process of leaving this world, just before he left, his body became physically debilitated. And Ishwara Puri and Ramachandra Puri were there, his personal servants. One of them, Ramachandra Puri, when Madhavendra Puri was calling out of pure love for Krishna, "Oh Krishna, what am I to do now? I didn't serve you. I didn't love you. I have no love for you. What can I do? Where are you? What should I do?" Helpless, as if he didn't know anything, as if he couldn't do anything. And Ramachandra Puri, what did he say? "Oh Guru Maharaj, you should be meditating on the eternal, you know, Krishna. You should be meditating on Krishna. You should be happy. You should be blissful. Why are you lamenting?" Madhavendra Puri says, "Get out. Get out of my sight. I don't want to even see you. You're advising me? You're telling me what to do? You're spiritual master?" Ishwara Puri, on the other hand, he took care of him. He served him lovingly. He reciprocated with him by chanting different verses of Chaitanya, of Krishna's pastimes to awaken and to encourage this loving service. And therefore he got the blessing by Madhavendra Puri to become the spiritual master of the Supreme Lord himself. Because of his loving devotional attitude, because of his loving devotional service, not some philosophical understanding that puts me, you know, in a position above others, or that puts me above theoretically the, you know, tremendous feelings I'm feeling for, you know, Krishna. Forget it. Krishna's, the most wonderful qualities of Krishna, the greatest opulence, the greatest everything, is his love for his devotees, and how his love for his devotees are exchanged among the devotees and him. Therefore, when Brahma saw Krishna in distress, and he saw all the Krishna's devotees in distress, he couldn't help but cry. Sometimes Prabhupada used to say, you know, if you could just learn this art, this simple art of crying for Krishna, then you could understand. Why? Because the heart, unless the heart is awakened, the spiritual soul is awakened, you can't actually cry for Krishna. All you can cry for is when you're not getting what you want. All you can cry is, you know, I'm being given too much service. We can complain about this, the management, or we can complain about that, or this, whatever. But the art of devotional service is to learn the art of crying for Krishna and for Krishna's devotees. Right now, Sridhar Maharaj, our god brother, is in Mayapur. He's been diagnosed as having terminal disease, cancer of liver, spread throughout the body. And all of his god brothers and god sisters and, you know, different devotees are just in his room all the time to get his association, to chant for him, to associate with him. And he is in such a jolly mood. You know, you can see physically that he's about ready to leave. He's going. You can see it in his color and the way he is, how much different he looks than normal. His belly is protruded like this because of water that's accumulated in his body. It has to be drained out. He has to be, through here, it has to be drained out, you know, every 2 days, every 3 days. 3-4 liters of water, they're draining out of his body as it accumulates this disease. So the other day he became feverish, and you know, the doctors are very afraid that, you know, he'll go into coma, and he's afraid. He doesn't want to go into coma before he leaves. He wants to be with the devotees up to the last moment, right? So the doctor came in, you know, and he took off his kurta, you know, because the doctor had to examine. And then the doctor saw this, you know, huge belly like this, and Sridhar Maharaj looked at him, and he was like suffering like anything. He had a 104 degree fever, and who knows the pain he's in? Who knows? We can't imagine what we think is difficult. And he looked up at the doctor and he said, we were all there, right? He looked up and he said, it's a boy. And everybody just started laughing. Everybody in the room just started laughing. Doctor started laughing. Everybody started laughing. Because, you know, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasho Chiti Nakam Chiti. I'm thinking I'm getting close to Krishna, and I'm lamenting if somebody comes to me and says the wrong thing. You know, if the quality of the prasadam isn't just, you know, according to my liking. Right? Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nashochiti nakamchiti. Not to be lamenting, not to be hankering for anything. This is real liberation. Then we can assess if we're going forward, how we are keeping our jolly, happy, blissful countenance and atmosphere and inside the heart, feelings, in the face of whatever. Because no one can live in this material world. No one can come into a body in this material world and go out of the body without experiencing extreme inconvenience. We watched physically Prabhupada ourselves. We were there and watched Srila Prabhupada leave this world. And although he was blissful, you know, if you could see that it was difficult. It's not easy even for liberated souls to leave the body. So these are the tests of our devotion. These are the tests of how nicely we're situated in devotional service. How, you know, our nature, how jolly we are feeling and how happy we are feeling under all circumstances, whether it be distressful or not distressful, whether it be easy or difficult, whether it be hot or cold, whether it be, you know, we have all the time in the world to do what we want to do, or we have no time in the world to do anything we want to do. It doesn't matter. We should feel jolly in devotional service of the Lord and in the company of His devotees. So we'll read more about how Lord Brahma dealt with this situation next time. Hare Krishna.